Good afternoon. This is Matt Woodbury. I'll be bringing you the first half of the Pantograph News from the edition dated Friday, November 10th, 2017. Let's get started with the article on the front page entitled, One Uptown Building to Open Next Month, written by Derek Bay. Standing on the top of Uptown's newest building, it's easy to forget how long the site spent as a hole in the ground. Quite the view here, said Chris George, development coordinator for the developer Tartan Realty Group, looking northwest from the heart of Uptown over the Normal Theater to Manchester Hall. This is something where, when you get people up here, there's a wow factor. You can't see this on a plan. You have to see it firsthand. A decade after construction stopped abruptly across the street from what's now Uptown Station, leaving an infamous chasm on the cherished Uptown Circle, it's almost finished again. This time, resulting in one Uptown on the Circle. A building with three stories of luxury apartments, a top second floor town offices, a future first floor restaurant, and underground parking. The town has plans to move in starting next week, and residents will follow shortly. George is still promoting the building's 21 rental units to potential residents, with about half currently set to be occupied. Rents range from $1,650 per month for a one-bedroom, one-bathroom unit to $4,200 for a three-bedroom, three-bathroom penthouse with a terrace, though both of these are taken. More details are at liveonecircle.com. The restaurant, and even a timeline for a reveal, remains unannounced. Promotional materials refer to the eatery as an American-themed bistro. The town plans to move engineering, facilities, inspections, and planning employees into its space. The offices will open to the public December 4th. That will free up parts of Uptown Station, which will be used for communications offices, the City Hall Annex, which will be used for parks and recreation storage, and the dentist's office space at 305 Linden Street will be unoccupied. The town hopes to clear space for a new normal public library as part of a future Uptown South District. The same night the Pantograph saw the building, the town officials toured as well, looking over not only their newest offices and the apartments above, but also a substantial investment of public resources. The town lent Tartan, the Chicago developer behind Portillo's, the flats and other local projects, $2.5 million to build the structure, sold the land it sits on for $1, and will pay top-of-the-market rent for office space there for 15 years. One Uptown on the Circle is phase two of Tartan's plans in Uptown, following the Hyatt Place Hotel next door, for which the town lent Tartan $5.1 million. The hotel's owners requested a $264,000 tax rebate this summer to make up for poor business that was later withdrawn. The units up top are just unbelievable, spectacular, they're so cool, said Normal City Manager Mark Peterson. As my father used to say, they ought to be for what they cost, added Communications Director Dan Irvin with a laugh. With the hole filled, the town continues to work on Uptown projects, including a possible underpass at Uptown Station, to not only move Amtrak passengers from the south platform to the station, but to bring pedestrians, cyclists, and other Uptown Circle to Uptown South. The town has paid three different consultants to study the underpass, the library, and Uptown South, to pave the way for future development, including possible federal funding. Officials envision public, private, and residential development, including townhouses, grocery store, and pharmacy. When he voted to approve One Uptown on the Circle last year, Councilmember R.C. McBride said the town should consider the project as a pilot for office and residential space in Uptown, including Uptown South. It eliminates maybe the only sore point that we've had throughout the Uptown development to this point, and it's the first domino for Uptown 2.0. So I'm pretty excited, he said. And our next article out of Bloomington is entitled, City Not Seeking Property Tax Hike, written by Maria Nagel. The city's portion of a Bloomington property tax bill is not expected to increase next year, but the public library is seeking a slight hike for building costs. The Bloomington City Council will consider the tax levy estimates at a special meeting at 5:30 p.m. Monday at City Hall. The council was not sympathetic to raising the city's property tax this year, said interim city manager Steve Rasmussen. There was just no appetite for that. We will seek to balance the budget in other ways, but not by raising the tax levy. We will look at expenditures and try to make cuts, and we may look at fees that we charge for services to try to balance our budget, added Mayor Terry Renner. I do not believe that raising property taxes in the city has any traction among the council, said Ward 6 Alderman Karen Schmidt. Our discussion at our retreat, held Saturday, has focused on streamlining our budget and controlling costs. The uncertainties at the state level that may affect municipal finances underscore our need to be cautious. In Bloomington, the 2017 tax levy for taxes payable in 2018 is proposed to remain at $20.06 million for the city. The library's levy is proposed to increase 3%, or $140,493, from $4.68 million payable in 2017 to $4.82 million payable in 2018. Together, the levies are expected to yield a total tax rate of $1.3442 per $100 EAV, producing a tax bill of $739 for a $165,000 house. That includes an increase of about $4.17 for the library. The tax rate, including the library's rate, likely would stay at $1.0836 per $100 EAV. The estimated tax rate for the library levy would be $0.2606 per $100 of EAV. To be conservative, the city estimated the preliminary EAV, which is based on the total taxable value of properties in the city, at this year's level of $1.851 billion. There's no real growth in the EAV, said Bloomington Finance Director Patty Lynn Silva. In fact, large tax appeals and new legislation allowing for greatly expanded exemptions for disabled veterans led to a $13 million decrease in EAV between the preliminary and final EAV last year, she added. In prior years, new residential and commercial construction adding to the tax base have supported levy increases without increasing individual tax bills. Property taxes have gone up, but not because of the city of Bloomington, said Renner. It's other taxing bodies that exclusively rely on property taxes, especially the schools, that have increased their levies. The city has stayed away from property tax increases since 2008, and we intend to continue that path. The levy increase is important for the library, because property taxes are essentially its major source of income, Renner added. The library's levy is proposed to increase 3%, or $140,493, from $4.68 million payable in 2017 to $4.82 million payable in 2018. If the council votes against the library's tax levy as proposed by the library's trustees, its proposed operating and maintenance budget of $5.59 billion will come back to the library board for revision. If approved, the $140,493 in additional revenue would be added to the library's capital fund balance of $2.43 million to be used as a down payment for the library's expansion or for $2 million in needed repairs to keep the library at its current facility at 203 East Olive Street. A final tax levy ordinance must be passed no later than December 18th. Silva estimated a deficit of about $1.5 million in the city's general fund because of stagnant retail sales tax and other revenue versus growing labor costs. That deficit is expected to increase to $3 million if the city includes the recommended annual commitment of $1.5 million in maintenance of city facilities in the budget. If revenue does not increase and no action is taken, city officials have projected the annual deficit could grow to $8.5 million by 2022. The normal city council signed off Monday on a preliminary 6.38% property tax increase next year to cost the owner of a home valued at $165,000 an extra $49 per year to cover employee pension costs. The hike is needed, said normal town officials, to meet funding goals for police and fire pensions. The town expects the tax rate to rise from $1.4115 per $100 of equalized asset valuation to $1.5015 per $100 EAV to accompany a $13 million tax levy as part of a fiscal 2019 budget to be adopted early next year. The new rate would bring the town's tax bill for a $165,000 house to about $826. And our next story is entitled Post Office, Parkway May Memorialize Sergeant Rogers, written by Kevin Barlow. Two separate pieces of legislation have been filed to officially name a Bloomington post office and a section of Veterans Parkway in honor of fallen Army Ranger Sergeant Joshua Rogers. Rogers, 22, of Bloomington, was killed in action April 27th in Nangarhar Province during a joint operation with Afghan forces. He was assigned to Company C, 3rd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment, and stationed at Fort Benning. He was on his third deployment to Afghanistan when he was killed. On Thursday, U.S. Representative, a Republican from Dunlap, introduced a bill in the U.S. House of Representatives to rename the post office at 1211 Tawanda Avenue. The naming of the Bloomington Post Office is a small gesture to show our appreciation for the ultimate sacrifice Sergeant Rogers made fighting for our freedoms, but it is my honor to introduce this piece of legislation in his memory, LaHood said in a release. Also by unanimous vote, the Illinois House has approved designating Veterans Parkway in Bloomington Normal in honor of Rogers. The resolution was sponsored by State Rep. Dan Brady, Republican of Bloomington. The designation would be ceremonial only and would not change the address of businesses located on Veterans Parkway. Congressman Rodney Davis, a Taylorville Republican, said he supported LaHood's bill. He called Rogers a hometown hero, and we want to make sure that his name and the sacrifice he made for us is remembered for generations to come. If signed into law, the bill would formally rename the post office the Sergeant Josh Rogers Post Office. The legislation, co-sponsored by the entire Illinois delegation, has been referred to the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee for further review. Brady noted that Rogers joined the Army after graduating from Normal Community High School because he wanted to serve his country and his community. He was a decorated soldier, but he was also a loved and loving son, grandson, and friend. He made everyone who knew him proud, and we in turn are proud to honor him with this Memorial Highway designation. If approved, the legislation would designate Veterans Parkway from the intersection of Interstate 74 North to the intersection of Interstate 55 as the Army Ranger Sergeant Joshua P. Rogers Memorial Highway and directs the Illinois Department of Transportation to erect the appropriate signage. Family members were not available for comment Thursday. And our next story is entitled Rauner, Pension Delay Not the Answer, written by Derek Bay. Governor Bruce Rauner understands that Normal is going through in raising property taxes to pay for pension costs, but he said he can't support a council member's suggested solution. After voting for a 6.38% property tax increase Monday to cover employee pensions, Kevin McCarthy asked aggrieved residents to call their state lawmakers about a provision requiring municipalities to catch up on pension payments by 2040, but Rauner thinks that law should stay. We've done what their town officials, saying in Illinois for decades, and that's created the $150 million liability we're dealing with today that's crushing our budget, he told the Pantograph. The Republican pointed to restructuring pensions and reducing overlapping units of government as better solutions to what ails municipalities like Normal and McLean County, which are cutting employees and expenses in response to declining funding from the state and local sales and income tax losses. If we could shrink that bureaucracy, it would free up money to go to a municipality or a school district while also allowing property taxes to be saved. It's a win-win, Rauner said. Rauner discussed that issue during a wide-ranging interview at CJ's restaurant in Bloomington. The Winnetka businessman is running for re-election in 2018 against several Democrats and a Republican challenger. Of whether residents can expect another state budget impasse, Illinois went 2 years without a spending plan, wreaking havoc on local social service agencies. Rauner, lay the blame on House Speaker Michael Madigan, a Chicago Democrat who passed budgets for decades under other governors. The governor's office has said the budget still is $1 billion or more out of balance despite an income tax hike, though other officials have challenged that. They don't dispute that the state has nearly $17 billion in unpaid bills. All I said was, let's have a balanced budget, Rauner said. This is unsustainable. Rauner also lauded Congressional Republicans' tax reform plan, despite the possibility of ending a federal tax deduction for state and local taxes paid by residents, which would especially hurt residents of high-tax states like Illinois. The plan is intended as a broad tax cut, but could hurt the middle class. What I do believe would be good is to have lower taxes and reduce the tax burden on working families and businesses. There's no question. Our taxes are too high at the federal level, and they're too high at the state level, he said. Rauner affirmed his opposition to a progressive income tax, which would charge wealthier residents a higher percentage of their income. The federal government and 34 states have such systems, but Illinois has a flat tax. It would push more employers out of the state, he said. All the changes I'm recommending either bring down growth in government spending or it helps boost our economic competitiveness to grow more jobs and expand our tax base. Otherwise, we'll never have balanced budgets. Moving to a little bit of criminal justice news, our next article is entitled Ex-Arena Manager Requests New Judge and is written by Edith Brady Lunny. A new judge will be named to hear one of five criminal cases against former management officials of the city-owned arena. On Thursday, the defense lawyer for Bart Rogers asked that Judge Robert Freitag be removed in the case that accuses the former general manager of Central Illinois Arena Management, CIAM, of theft of government funds from the venue then known as U.S. Cellular Coliseum. The defense and state have a right to request a new judge at the start of a case before substantive decisions are made. The motion by lawyer Stephanie Wong follows similar requests from the state to substitute Judge Scott Drzewski from all five cases. Freitag was assigned as a result of those motions. The decision on which 11th Judicial Circuit judge will hear Rogers' case was referred to Chief Judge Kevin Fitzgerald. Judge Casey Costigan, another McLean County judge who hears felony cases, has recused himself from handling the case against co-defendant John Y. Butler, who served as CIAM president. Butler faces the majority of the 111 indictments returned last Monday by a McLean County grand jury. He is accused of theft, money laundering, wire fraud, filing false sales tax returns, and conspiracy to commit tax evasion. The charges were filed following an 18-month Illinois State Police probe into alleged mismanagement of money at the venue. Questions surfaced in August 2016 as the city was preparing to enter into an agreement with a new management firm after CIAM and the city ended a 10-year contract. Kelly W. Klein, who served as Assistant General for Finance, is charged with theft and money laundering. Paul E. Grizar, former Food and Beverage Director for CIAM, faces theft, money laundering, and tax-related charges. J. C. Leish, ex-finance director of BMI Concessions, the venue's food and beverages service at the time, is charged with theft, wire fraud, money laundering, and conspiracy to commit tax evasion. In another matter, Assistant State's Attorney Brad Rigdon objected to Rogers' absence from the hearing. Saying that Wong unilaterally waived Rogers' appearance in court, Rigdon asked that the hearing be postponed until Rogers could be present. Freitag noted that a defendant's appearance is preferable, but given Rogers' knowledge of the request for a new judge and a lack of objection, the defendant's presence was not necessary. A new court date will be set for Rogers after the judicial appointment. And moving on, our next article is entitled Walls, Not Curtains, Fall. Legacy of Conklin's Barn 2 continues as new site takes shape. This is written by Dan Kraft. The 76-year-old walls finally came tumbling down this week at Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater near Goodfield. Hope to raise in its place soon, the Barn 3. It was akin to a private family burial service, and, honestly, it was incredibly moving and emotional for a few of us who were present. We wouldn't have wanted it any other way, said Abby Reel, the theater angel who has partnered with longtime Bar 2 owner Mary Simon to bring the shows back to where it all began. The demolition of the former Angus Cattle Barn, disabled beyond repair by an August tornado 2 years ago, was purposely undertaken away from public and media scrutiny. This has been an emotional month, with us salvaging and sorting through 40 years of memory, said Simon. But I feel blessed and extremely lucky to have had that time with our dear patrons. Spared from the demo team's heavy equipment was the adjoining brick box office building and kitchen. They will be renovated and joined up with the new Barn 3, Reel said. It was a happy and sad moment. A lot of history, a lot of memories, but joy that it doesn't have to be the end. The Barn 2 legacy will continue, added Reel, a former Conklin employee who came forward 2 months ago with a plan to partner with Simon to build a new barn. Reel, assistant director of career development at Illinois Wesleyan University, is financing the majority of the project out of her own pocket until the bank requests for a $100,000 down payment to secure a construction loan is met. I've cashed out my entire retirement package to buy the barn from Mary, and my family has invested over $400,000 to reunite the 5-acre brick house property back with the original barn parcel. In the 2 months since the announcement, a flock of fellow theater angels has come forward with around half that amount, $50,000, via the ongoing barn-raising campaign at thebarn3.com. Mary and I are humbled with gratitude, she said of the private patron donations. The hope, she added, is for a handful of corporate sponsors to come forward and complete the goal. At this point, they would change the game for us entirely. It would take us from a place of cautious optimism to full confidence that the Barn 3 will raise by this time next year. Although we have not met our fundraising goal, if we did not demo the barn and pour the new concrete foundation before Thanksgiving, we would not be able to make our goal of being in the new venue by December 2018, said Reel. For the past 2 years, the Conklin Players have been staging short-run productions at Five Points Washington in Washington, with the final show there, A Gift of Christmas, set for November 30th through December 3rd. I took a step of faith in moving forward, said Reel. Faith that the money will come, and faith that the project will be funded through our banking partner. I have enough money of my own to pay for the work that's been done so far. She added that actual construction will begin the minute the bank says yes. We are awaiting Small Business Administration approval on new construction appraisal to come back. We hope to know something by the beginning of December. Moving right along, our next article, written by Kevin Barlow, is entitled Report, Trooper Failed to Reduce Speed, Fatal Crash Occurred in Construction Zone. A crash that killed an Illinois State Trooper in June was caused when he failed to reduce his speed to avoid the accident, according to a crash report obtained by the Pantograph on Thursday. Ryan Albin, 37, died at 8:45 p.m. on June 28th at Carl Hospital in Urbana from injuries suffered in the two-vehicle crash about 5 hours earlier on Interstate 74 near Farmer City. The crash report, obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request, states Albin was southbound in a 2016 Ford State Police vehicle at 3:08 p.m. near mile marker 156 in DeWitt County. The report says Albin was driving in the left lane. A second vehicle, identified as a 2014 box van, was also in the left lane in front of Albin, according to the report. The truck, driven by a 47-year-old normal man, was slowed in traffic in the left lane at around the same time as the squad car that failed to reduce speed and rear-ended the truck, the report states. The report does not state how fast Albin's squad car was going. State police investigators also talked with 5 other witnesses. One was to the immediate right of where the crash occurred. A second vehicle was trailing the state trooper's vehicle, according to the report. Their statements are not included in the crash report. The crash occurred in a construction zone with a posted speed limit of 55 miles per hour. There were no construction workers present at the time, the report states. Alvin, who was on duty at the time, was transported to Carl Hospital by the Farmer City Ambulance. ISP investigators declined to comment further on the report. Alvin's canine partner, Biko, a 4-year-old Belgian Malinois, was in the rear of the squad car at the time of the crash. He was examined at the University of Illinois Emergency Veterinary Hospital, then spent the week with Alvin's family. The dog returned to active duty in District 6, which includes McLean, Livingston, and DeWitt counties. A new handler is expected to train with Biko this fall. Alvin grew up near Bellflower and attended Blue Ridge High School in Farmer City and Eureka College. About 600 people attended his funeral on July 6th, including Governor Bruce Rauner and about 400 police officers from Illinois and several other states. Continuing with other local news, our next article is entitled Hayworth Set to Ring in Holiday Season, Christmas Parade Sunday, one of first scheduled in the area. Written by Kevin Barlow. A sure sign that the holidays are approaching is the arrival of the area's first Christmas parade. With a theme of holidays, Hayworth style, it will set off at 2 p.m. Sunday in downtown Hayworth. "We are one of the first parades of the season, and we sometimes catch a little flack for that," said Roger Zook, a member of the Hayworth Christmas Organization. "But we are very proud of that. What do I know? Anyway, I voted for July." "Being the first parade of the season has its advantages," said Diane Green, the Hayworth Christmas Organization president. "I hear comments both ways, because some think it's too soon, but so many of the entrants appreciate it being early," she said. "We used to be the last parade in the area on the second Sunday in December, but after the blizzard in 2010, we moved it to the second Sunday in November. We have had huge crowds ever since, and everyone seems to get into the spirit earlier. The temperature is expected to be around 43 degrees in downtown Hayworth on Sunday, but the parade was canceled in December 1995 because of bitter cold. At this time of the year, you never know what you are going to get with the weather," Zook added. About 75 entries are expected, including the Hayworth High School Marching Band. The annual holiday craft fair and bake sale at the American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars posts will begin following the parade. "We work very hard to get as many entries as we can," Zook said. "We look for things that are unique or different. For instance, Rick Sullivan of Kathy's Auto Body in Clinton will be bringing three of his creations, including his upside-down truck, his radio flyer convertible, and his motorized princess carriage. Also scheduled to appear is a 1942 American LaFrance fire truck that was transformed into a mobile wedding chapel on an episode of Trick My Truck. The truck is owned by Daryl Best of Shelbyville. I've worked for 3 years to get that here," Zook said. "I'm really excited and think it will be very popular." There also will be an Abraham Lincoln impersonator, several people in costume, classic vehicles, floats, and an appearance by Santa Claus. Zook said it is difficult to estimate the crowds that annually attend the parade, but notes that it is in the hundreds. "Of course, a lot of it depends on the weather, but normally it's about 4 deep or 3 or 4 straight blocks," he said. "It's a good community event for all ages, and as always, there will be lots of candy for the kids." Since we're running short on time, I will end today with today's Flicked Fact. The question, in Business Insider's 2017 list of America's top 25 Irish pubs, Illinois has 2 of them. Can you name them? Well, the answer, Darcy's Pub, a popular spot in Springfield, is listed as number 10. At number 19 is Maggie Miley's in Uptown Normal. McSorley's Old Ale House in Manhattan's East Village section of New York City is number 1. And that's about all the time I have for today. Thank you for listening. I'm Matt Woodbury, bringing you the first half of the Pantograph News from Friday, November 10th. We'll be back shortly with the second half, so please continue listening.